And now we turn to a medical story from the past. 50 years ago, to be exact, on April 12, 1955, the world learned of the development of an effective vaccine against polio. At the time, polio was among the most feared diseases of the 20th century, a crippling illness that targeted children. 50 years later, the vaccine is still considered a medical milestone in view of the lives it's changed here and around the world. Dr. Sherwin Newland is professor emeritus of clinical surgery at Yale University. He's written many books on the subjects of medicine and bioethics and lived through the time of polio. What about you? What do you remember about those days? How did polio and the vaccine touch your life? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. Sherwin Newland joins us now from his home in New Haven, Connecticut. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You were a medical student 50 years ago. Remind us, how big a deal was polio?
Oh, it was an enormous deal, especially in the summer and fall when the cases became very, very frequent and the hospital wards were filled with relatively young people with polio. As a matter of fact, as you know, they were children and young adults primarily.
And that in particular terrorized parents.
Oh, yes, it terrorized parents because of a number of reasons. One of them was simply the rapidity with which this disease would appear. In the morning, a child might be perfectly well or perhaps have what might be thought of as a small upper respiratory infection, and by evening, the paralysis was crawling up this child's body, and he was hospitalized and in danger of dying.
And in danger of dying. And it was an epidemic at the time.
Oh, yes.
How, you know, there were, I'm old enough to remember people remembering it, and that, you know, people say, you know, we had to stay out of the swimming pools was what a lot of people remember.
That's right. Stay out of public places.
And this, of course, you're trying to deal with children in the summer and fall.
That was one of the worst parts of it, including the fact that children in summer camps were developing polio, and there might be a group of cases that would suddenly spring up in a perfectly ordinary summer camp where children had been sent to enjoy this vacation.
The healthful benefits of country air and whatnot.
Exactly.
And it was not only that they might die, obviously that's the immediate concern, but the debilitating element of this disease brought an instrument into the American lexicon that has since been forgotten, the iron lung.
The iron lung, yes. I spent more than one night tending a patient in an iron lung just to be sure that it continued to function, yes.
People lived for years in these devices.
People lived for years. People, some of them lived out the rest of their lives in those enormous tanks, and we would sit by them speaking to these people. It was an interesting phenomenon for us as medical students because the people who were most prone to develop polio, ironically, were the kinds of people a medical student might identify with. And here's what I mean. This was a disease of the middle class. It was well known that people who lived in economically deprived areas or conditions, what in those days we called slums, were less likely to develop polio. And the theory was that because the children in such families or the young adults in such families had been exposed over and over again to what we called subclinical infection, infection that didn't manifest itself as disease, many of them were immune, whereas the kinds of kids who might live next door to a medical student or the kinds of kids that he or she, in those days it was always he, had grown up with would have less exposure and would therefore be more likely to get it.
Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation on polio 50 years ago, 800-989-8255. We're talking with Dr. Sherwin Newland, and let's talk now with Susan. Susan is with us from San Antonio, Texas.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. I was a polio pioneer and was one of the first groups to be to receive the polio vaccine. My whole class was. And I went to a small private school, and we had to be, you know, driven to this, and it was quite an event always. I can't remember exactly how many vaccinations we received, but I do remember that there was a needle that must have been, I don't know, it looked at least 6 inches long, and my recollection is that it could have gone all the way through my arm.
Probably at least 6 inches
long. At least 6 inches long. And one of my classmates in the first grade was indeed afflicted with polio and spent that year or more in an iron lung.
So that this was very real to you?
Absolutely real to us, yes.
And being a polio pioneer, I assume that meant you were among the first to get the vaccine.
That's right, yes.
And other than the memory of that gigantic needle, any other memories?
Well, I remember that, not so much about that, but I remember that as we would walk along the streets and so forth, little mud puddles with the green scum and so forth, people mm-hmm. would say that you could get polio from that. I mean, there were all sorts of things that were in the vernacular of, you know, how you could get polio, and you had to be so careful because almost anything practically could give you polio.
Well, Susan, thanks very much for giving us a call.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Newland, did people know prior to the development of the vaccine what caused polio?
Well, actually, it was known that there were three separate viruses that had been identified. And, of course, the secret to the development of the vaccine was that a method had been brought together by several scientists who ended up winning the Nobel Prize for this to culture this. It was done with monkey kidneys, as I recall, and the ability to culture the poliovirus, the three prevalent strains, was the secret behind which this great work was done.
We're talking about polio 50 years ago today, the announcement that an effective vaccine had been developed. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line, and this is Dahl.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you. My brother and I grew up in Lula, Mississippi, and when we were 2 and 3, he's a year older than I am, we went to get our polio vaccine, and the batch they said that they'd sent from Memphis, Tennessee, was something was wrong, contaminated or something. They said come back in a week. And then during that week, my brother contracted polio, and I didn't. But he was in a coma for, like, a day. He had a spinal form of it where, our doctor said that he wasn't expected to live through it, but he did. And he had a long recovery, but he plays rugby. You would never know he had polio. But I just remember he got a blue fishing pole with a red fish on the end, and I wanted it, and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like the kids who got ice cream because they had the tonsils out. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. He got lots and lots of presents. I remember that, and I remember my mother crying. I remember that, too, even though I was pretty young.
Dr. Newland, were problems caused by the nature of the vaccine itself?
Well, there were some problems with the initial Salk vaccine on that wonderful day when Dr. Thomas Francis announced the successful conclusion of the field trials. He also had to announce that one of the types of poliovirus was only susceptible 70% of the time, and the other two types were susceptible 90% of the time. And I suspect that what we've just heard about is that a batch may have been contaminated in some way or overdosed with methylate, which was a mercury-based antiseptic that had been added to some of the batches of vaccine. And probably what occurred was they realized that this particular batch in that area was not ready, and unfortunately they had to hold off, and the results were extraordinarily bad, as you've just heard.
But, Dahl, your brother's now fine.
Yeah, and his name is Guy, by the way. Guy the Third.
Guy the Third.
Anyway, he lives in Kentucky.
I suspect he still has that fishing pole and taunts you with it every time he sees you.
He mentions it now and then. He's the best brother in the whole universe.
Dahl, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
There's an email we got from Laura. I can still remember the feeling of holding back tears until the back of my jaw hurt with my lips quivering as I received a polio shot at the age of 6 in kindergarten in 1955. I didn't want to cry if my mother wasn't there to comfort me. I also remember the atmosphere of fear around polio, with the swimming pools being closed. A distant relative contracted polio, and I remember being totally baffled by the phrase, iron lung. It became part of the subtle global fears that we carried, polio and the atomic bomb. Sadly, our children today have new fears to carry. I wonder, Dr. Newland, did you get a vaccination yourself?
Oh, yes. We all got that initial salk vaccine, and then that, of course, was made with a so-called killed virus, and then later when Dr. Sabin came along with the virus that was weakened, so-called attenuated, and we had it, we were able to take it by mouth while we then took it again.
All right, let's talk now with Steve. Steve's calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the program. It's
sure.
Excellent. It brings back such a vivid memory. My mother was a nurse in a doctor's office in Syracuse, New York area. And in the middle of the night, my mother and father woke my brother, sister, and myself up and snuck us in the back way of the doctor's office because he had just enough of the vaccine to share with his employees' children. And this was before it was generally available to the public. And we got it. I'm 54, and I just remember, I remember Susan's extraordinarily long needle, and I remember us being told not to talk about the fact that we had this midnight clandestine meeting with Dr. Carpenter.
That's a strange, and not to talk, but you went swimming the next day. No, I'm just kidding.
I remember pools being closed.
Yeah.
But, I do remember very clearly, and we talked about it, we still do, actually, the fact that this particular doctor rationed out very carefully the vaccine to his employees' children before it was available to anyone else.
Well, that story that Steve just told tells it in a nutshell, the terror that the fear of this disease brought into the hearts of parents and children, and then suddenly, one day, in April of 1955, we hear, oh my gosh, we can prevent it. And people were doing everything they could to immunize their children, as is, of course, so easily understandable.
Steve, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And Dr. Newland, as always, appreciate your time today.
Pleasure.
Sherwin Newland, Professor Emeritus of Clinical Surgery at Yale University, the author of many books, including Doctors, the Biography of Medicine, and How We Die. He joined us from his home in New Haven, Connecticut. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.